feel like Kobe in a fourth quarter.
This is the Dane Moore NBA podcast brought to you by Blue Wire Podcasts. And fuck it, Jack, let's play.
Let's pod, man. Let's do it.
That was, you know, the game I thought was, I'd leave the game and you're like, man, that was kind of depressing the way it finishes. But for Kat to come on and just talk to us post-game on Zoom here at Target Center, his mood, I feel, really kind of shifted the energy that's kind of surrounding this, and which is probably a good reminder that even though the Wolves lost 125-117, I'm talking about, did I get the score right this time?
125-122.
I always mess it up. Why do I do that? Even though the Wolves lost 125-122, I felt that probably the biggest story here is not that Anthony Edwards didn't shoot a layup at the end of the game or whatever. It's that Kat played. And I think, on top of that, that Kat actually looked effective despite playing with one hand.
Absolutely. And what stuck out to me, too, and I think you can probably tell just in the upbeatness of kind of our conversation already, is that Kat used the word happy to describe himself
a lot
in the post-game Zoom. He was very talkative. He had a smile on his face and mentioned that he was just thrilled that he was able to be back out on the court, period, tonight. And you know, like you said, he was very effective. I think early on in the first quarter, he wasn't really aggressive in trying to, you know, drive to the rim or play in the post. He was really just playing on the perimeter as a screener, as a handoff guy, and someone that just merely stretched the floor just by being out there. Mm-hmm. And the paint was wide open for the whole entire first quarter, which allowed other guys to kind of get going and find driving lanes, whether it be to attack the basket like D'Lo and Jarrett Culver did, or to just be able to spot up in the corners like Malik Beasley did, which resulted in him having three threes that got him off to an 11-point first quarter.
Yeah, it kind of just illustrates to you what this team is supposed to look like. And even, you know, result probably included, you know. Maybe they aren't a team that is better than the San Antonio Spurs. But they are a team that can compete with the San Antonio Spurs. And the team of 2 days ago was not, you know. And obviously some of that's intuitive. You add Karl-Anthony Towns back to the mix. But everything to me as I'm sitting there watching from the way they're playing, the way the rotations are working, it all just made more sense. There weren't these, the word I feel like I've kept using on these pods after every game or just talking about this team is broken. You know, it's broken because they don't have the right players at right positions to be able to function a group. It's broken because you can't play your defensive schemes because you don't have the personnel to do so. And this didn't feel broken. It felt like a team with an identity, and this team does not feel like it's had an identity for 2 weeks since Karl-Anthony Towns was out, and now they do. And I think that's exciting. I think that's, you know, I think that is something for this team to, you know, to move forward with, right? Like we can now have a conversation about what the Timberwolves are going to be this season, even if it's with single-handed, you know, literally Karl-Anthony Towns.
Yeah, and I think it's really important too that this offense didn't seem like it missed a beat when Kat got out there. And I think we've heard Ryan Saunders talk over and over again about how spacing is the most important thing to this team, you know, in the conversation of anything that could be important to this team. And I thought the spacing tonight was really excellent. And the fact that they were able to do that right away from the jump, they shot over 60% in the first quarter. I think they were 6 of 6 from three.
They were 6 of 6 from three in the first quarter.
In the first quarter, yeah, and so
and won by like two.
I think they won by, well, they had a 6-point lead after the first quarter, I think. But yeah, I just think that when you're able to space the floor and you're able to kind of get everybody involved and help everybody find a rhythm early in the game, I think it just kind of carries you through. And obviously there were some issues on the defensive end of the floor that kind of reared its head in the second quarter with just being completely unable to defend guys on the perimeter and prevent interior penetration.
Yeah, but I think let's not brush over the first quarter defensively, where you go, again, 2 days ago, this team was a group that could not be top, you know, or they'd be like the 25th best defense in the league, best case. On the best night, they'd be one of the worst defenses.
They were 30th in the league without Kat.
And I'm saying, like, even when they were playing well defensively without Kat, it was it didn't matter. It's like that Denver game, the game where Wancho had like 25 in the first half. You're like, man, they're clicking offensively. And like the level that they were clicking at just matched what Denver was doing. And that was because of the defense, right? And I think, like, as I watch Cat play in the first quarter, it's the most intentional I've ever seen him. Not even close. Like, he's going out there and he's saying in his body language is dictating that this end of the floor is more important than the other one, the defensive side. And I mean, how many Wolves games of the 400 games he's played in his career have you said that? Like, and that takes some, you know, it takes something from him when you are so good offensively to not just be like, well, I'm going to do the thing I'm better at, you know? And I thought that was so encouraging and leads to some optimism that this team could compete in some games. Because if you're the 30th defense, you just don't. You're the
right.
You're like the Cavs last year. That's who you are.
Yeah, and the Wolves were eighth in defense in the first two games with Cat, and that's obviously not going to sustain throughout the whole entire season. But I think it's really encouraging, and we heard Cat say it in the post game that we heard him repeatedly say, "I need to keep finding new ways to help this team win. I need to keep helping this team win." And I think it's very evident that Cat looked in the mirror, you know, in between last season and this season, and understood the fact that. That he really needed to improve on the defensive end of the floor. He's smarter about where he is on the floor. He's smarter about communicating, and he's been. I thought he was excellent tonight, especially when he was on the end of the floor that I was sitting on, which was in the second quarter, of calling out switches, of calling out when guys need to rotate. I thought rotations tonight were really good. Defensive rotations, correct. And I think that has a lot to do with Cat kind of calling things out and communicating. I just thought the communication overall was much, much better tonight.
There was this element of he was sitting back defensively and seeing what the Spurs were trying to put together offensively and seeing it transpire kind of before it transpired. And, I mean, you go around the league and you look at the best defensive bigs. Like, that's what they're doing. Because the best defensive bigs are one big and typically kind of slow. So the only way you can compete with a good offense is to beat them to the spot, right? You have to be a step ahead. And I can think of, again, so few times in Cat's career where it's been that on the defensive end. And for that reason, that's a huge reason why the Wolves have been a bottom five defense pretty much every year of his career. And the thing I put down in my notes was the only other person I've ever seen do this on the Timberwolves since I've been covering the team and coming to games is Gorgie, where he sat back, called out coverages, and pointed out what not only he has to do, but what others have to do. And I think in the NBA, particularly if you're going to play a drop scheme, your big has to be able to do that.
And do it really effectively.
And, you know, I'm not saying he's, you know, going to be Gorgie or he's going to be some elite defensive center or anything. I don't know. We'll see. But
he can certainly be a good one.
Yeah, and that's why the defense worked last year when Cat was out with the knee thing at the beginning of the year where they were still, you know, like competitive and they had that Gorgie, they had that Rocco group. Like, when you are playing a rim defending center, that's what you got to do. And that just, I mean, bottom line, it creates a baseline for this team of like how far you slide on the gradient towards average defense. You raise the floor of this entire team, because as we saw tonight, they got offensive weapons that can multiple outside of Cat. Like, this hasn't been Cat on offense. I mean, I know what do you average? What do you finish with, like 25 or something?
Yeah, I think the number that Cat finished with 25 on 9 of 17 shooting, but Malik had 29.
Yeah, so. And it feels like Malik carried the offense more. It feels like D'Angelo at times carried the offense, Ant at times, you know, carried the offense, and that's when I asked Cat about it post game, you know, just about being more intentional about passing. It's like, is that the risk? Is that? And he said, no. The best thing for this team right now is for me to be a distributor. Not even just right now. He just said that's the best thing for this team.
I think they also just become so much harder to guard. If they know that they can't just sit off of Cat, and kind of in the help side, because he can just whip cross court passes like he did with two skip passes to Malik in the fourth quarter. You know, he's just going to be able to feast.
Yeah, they needed another one of those to go down, though.
I know. There was one. And then he had the behind-the-back pass to D'Lo.
D'Lo's got to make that.
I know. He's got to. But, yeah, I just think that's really
That'd
encouraging.
All and over house highlights right
and,
now.
And when he – and when Cat will be healthy, when his wrist eventually gets healthy, hopefully, fingers crossed, you know, he's going to see a lot of single teams, because teams are going to have to respect his passing abilities. And when he does get doubled, I think he's far better equipped now to make those passes, but also to make defenses pay, because there's also shooters around him for the first time really in his career that can knock down these open shots.
How did you feel about the balance, though, maybe in the higher leverage situations?
There wasn't enough Cat.
Yeah, right? Like, there were times for me where I felt like if they're guarding him in single coverage, and I just feel this about Cat always, doesn't matter who's guarding him.
Get on the ball.
Jakob Poeltl, is a good defensive one-on-one center, and Cat was just, it's just like, bang, bang, get to that right hook. Like, and I felt like there could have been more of that. I think there has to be. You go to that, you feed that, make them bring the double, and then you kick out of it. Like, there was almost a little bit too much distribution out of that. I would have liked him to see a little bit more, be a little bit more intentional offensively to look for his own shot. But at the same time, you're like, he's probably trying to stay away from, you know, if he's getting to that right hook, it's bang with his left shoulder. And his right. left wrist is there, too. So I understand there's a balance, too.
Yeah, there's a balance, too, as well. And I think part of it, too, is that, you know, Malik hit a couple early in the fourth quarter. D'Angelo started to get going in the fourth quarter. And I think when guys are hot, you want to try and keep getting them the ball. And I think that's probably what Cat was trying to do. But at the same time, you know, that last possession, I thought, in regulation, I thought was terrible. You know, you just give D'Lo a high ball screen. He takes a contested long mid-range shot when... You know, I would have liked to see them go back to a wedge action that they ran at the end of the Detroit game.
So explain that. What would you explain in what it would have looked like, what you would have liked to see?
So what happened is there's kind of a three-man pick and roll or three-man screen game with Cat, D'Lo, and Rubio, where Rubio has the ball at the top of the key. D'Angelo Russell has the ball kind of on the wing, and Ricky Rubio comes to set a screen for Cat, who's at the top of the key, and he goes over the screen to the same side of the floor that D'Angelo Russell is on, and D'Lo throws the ball into the post to Cat.
Yep.
And that's how you get a one-on-one situation in the post for Cat to go attack or create or do whatever. And the Wolves ran that repeatedly at the end of the Detroit game. I think they ran it four or five times in a row, and they got either a bucket or Cat got fouled on every single one of those possessions. And I just would have liked to see more of that for that last possession.
So here's the counter argument, though, of why not to do that, and not that the result they got was good, but I'm sitting there, there's like 16 seconds or whatever when they had that last play and tie game. To me, I just don't want San Antonio to get the ball back. I think it's very important you need to time that last play so that you are taking the last shot. You can't turn the ball over, and you can't give the ball back to them with, you know, multiple seconds left.
Mm-hmm.
That's important. So is there a better look you can get out of that? For sure, that wasn't a good look. But I think the wedge action that you're talking about and trying to basically, in very layman's terms, trying to get Cat isolate a post up, the problem of that is timing.
That's fair.
Like, because if Cat's on the catch there, You can't do the sit up top, dribble between your legs for 5 seconds until it's time.
Yeah,
or maybe
he faces up and he can still see the clock. I just think that would have been a way to either get Cat a foul, a good look at the rim, or have a wide open shooter somewhere on the perimeter. But
there's a difference, though. Like, you need to get him in a spot where he's isolated and can drain time. I think that's the balance you have to hit. And some of those actions, like the Detroit game's a good example. Like, those are down the last 2 minutes.
And time wasn't really a factor.
You know, it's...
Yeah,
so I got to go back and rewatch a lot of that, too. But I remember I literally tweeted it before the play happened. Just don't turn the ball over. Take the last shot. Like, because as bad of a look as that is from D'Lo...
It's better than a turnover.
It's better.
And
it's
it took
like,
the whole time.
That still goes in. You run that exact same thing 10 times. He makes that three times. Not that that's like a good
odds.
Yeah,
and I mean, and he had made a shot similar to it, you know, two or three other times in the last 3 minutes of the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm,
so I get it.
Yeah, it's, and I also kind of understand maybe it not being Cat also with the wrist, but we don't know, like, we don't know what the extent of what exactly Cat can and cannot.
And he said it wasn't much.
he did say that. So we've been fairly positive here for the first 15 minutes. There was, I mean, there was poor execution on that last play, and then the execution obviously got even worse in overtime. So let's sit on that, but let's take a quick break first. Hey, everyone. I want to tell you about Blue Wire Hustle, a brand new program where you can host your very own podcast here at Blue Wire. Hustle was created to give everyone the opportunity to take their podcast to the next level. Or if you want to host a podcast and just don't know where to start, Hustle is the perfect place for you. As part of the program, you'll receive cover art for your pod, Q&As with Blue Wire podcasters, access to our community Discord, and an e-learning course full of tips and tricks that we all use. On top of that, we'll get your show pushed out to Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, all those listening platforms. And what I can tell you from my own experience is it costs more than $15 a month to host your own podcast. Blue Wire Hustle only charges that, which is the same rate as any other hosting site would charge you just for the initial setup. So whether you're starting from scratch or have an existing show that you want to grow, Hustle is an open door to leveling up your sports experience. Acceptance into the program is limited, so get your application in today. To apply, go to bwhustle.com/join. Check out the description box to find out more. That's bwhustle.com/join. All right, so let's talk about overtime, Jack. I think an interesting place to start, or the place to start, is about who is on the floor. And it started at the end of the fourth quarter, where Saunders opted to go with Rubio at the one, D'Lo at the two, Beasley at the three, Ant at the four, and Cat at the five. Initially, Culver was out there at the, you know, towards those last 5 minutes of the fourth. And Saunders opted to go with Edwards, who was kind of rolling, but that move is an offensively motivated move. So just at that time, what were you thinking about deciding to close with Edwards, which is something that they haven't done?
Yeah, so I kind of thought about the overall flow of the game, and that San Antonio was playing small for pretty much the entire game. So San Antonio played a point guard and DeJounte Murray, and they played three shooting guards, essentially, in Lonnie Walker, DeMar DeRozan, and Keldon Johnson. And then they had either Aldridge or Poeltl or, you know, in there at the five. And I think that was just a move to really try and get Anthony Edwards to be able to get in there and take the ball to the rim surrounded by four shooters.
Given that they didn't really need to worry about getting pounded on the interior, whether that just be on the glass or just on the post.
Yeah, and I think another part of it too is that, you know, Jarrett Culver was really going through the ringer trying to contain DeMar DeRozan. DeMar DeRozan was going through Jarrett Culver, driving to the rim, especially in the third and fourth quarters.
Yeah.
And I think that trying to get a bigger body and Ant in there, I think it worked to a certain extent to try and keep DeRozan above the free throw line. You know, he didn't really do much in overtime. And so,
relative to
The fourth quarter, I thought.
Well, okay. For me, I thought it was kind of fine in the fourth, but then in overtime, I thought that they just decided that was their mismatch and that they could, you know, early on, DeRozan got Edwards on another one of his pump fakes again. And I thought at that point, I didn't understand why Edwards was still on DeRozan. Like, that was clearly their offensive option there. And I hear you on the, like, not going through him sort of thing. And there was,
because he was getting to the line. I think he had 16 free throw attempts tonight, 13 free throw attempts tonight.
Yeah, it felt like in overtime that I think I would have taken Anthony Edwards off of
that,
DeMar DeRozan there. But it was interesting. You and I were texting about this earlier today, just like this whole idea of if Cat's back, what's the optimal role for Anthony Edwards, right? Like, and it's play him. But it's kind of more, or what we were texting about before the game was, it's more in this idea that he's this guy who boosts the second unit's scoring, right? And that makes a lot of sense. That group has a bunch of role players and kind of need, I think what you texted me was, you need Edwards in there to give that second half 15. Like, you do it. And I agree with that. And he did that. And so I was kind of like, okay, check. Like, he did his job tonight. And then the job expanded because now he's closing for the first game and he's taking on this pretty big defensive assignment. And I don't know. Again, probably got to go watch it back, but it does seem like there maybe could have been a little bit of back and forth between Edwards and Culver there.
I agree completely.
To find a better balance. You know, obviously we're bearing the lead here. Edwards at the end of the game, you know, for one reason or another, didn't dunk it and tried to kick it out for a three. It was, you know, poor execution on his part. Understandable, you know, for a 19-year-old to be a little bit lost, but that was bad.
Like, yeah.
That was we're talking about execution. He didn't execute right there. So, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to figure out what's the best way to use Anthony Edwards in a role that's bigger than his normal get 15, 17 on the second unit.
Yeah, and for me, I think he's got to really prove that he can consistently do that while attacking and getting downhill, because we haven't seen that this year. Sure, he could. I mean, he had 26. He had 26, I think, against Portland, but most of that was in garbage time and against really poor defenders. But for me, I just really love to see Anthony Edwards do way more of what he did in the third quarter.
Yeah,
and that
was great.
He got two double drags in a row, which is two staggered ball screens up top from the two bigs. And on the first one, he blew past everybody and got to the rim and finished. And then on the second one, he dragged three defenders with him and Naz Reid was wide open at the top of the key for three. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of the third quarter, the final possession of the third quarter for the Wolves, I forget who his defender was, but he took him off the dribble, got inside, and Naz was in the right corner and Naz's defender came up and tried to trap Ant at the block and he kicked it to Naz for a wide open three. And those are the types of plays that Minnesota really needs him to make. And
that's the downhill part. It's not downhill doesn't just mean get to the rim.
Yeah.
It means put pressure on the rim.
Oh, put pressure and collapse the defense.
Yes.
And I think when you're collapsing the defense, it just makes everything so much easier for the guys around you. And, you know, Ricky Rubio, sure, he can get inside, but Ricky Rubio is not a guy who's going to collapse the defense. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, if Anthony Edwards is able to consistently collapse defenses, this second unit could be one of the better second units in the NBA. Just because I think that you have competent defenders in Rubio and Culver. You have a big body in Edwards, who on some nights could be a good defender. On some nights, he could be a bad defender. And then, you know, kind of your throw-in four, depending on who you're playing in the flow of the game. And then, you know, Naz has shown that he can kind of take some centers off the bounce and score inside. And
it feels like that group now makes sense.
Like, yeah.
All it takes is Cat to make sense, because that's what did them in the two Denver games, was they had no way to kind of survive the beginning of the fourth quarter to get to the closing group. They just didn't have a second unit that could both competently defend and competently score.
And I think part of that comes back to the whole, you know, challenge of trying to find guys, pairs of two or trios of guys that really fit together and can, you know, play off of one another well. And I think the Wolves have kind of found one in Culver, Edwards, and Naz.
And Beasley's playing with them too. I like that part of it too.
Yeah, so do I. And I think it just gives them another shooter to space the floor to kind of give Ant a little bit more room to work with. But also to be able to kind of do the just flip roles for Malik and Anthony, which is great. But in order for Anthony to kind of take that next step and get into that closing role, I think he's got to just be really confident and decisive in being able to take guys off the bounce and just stay afloat defensively.
I thought it was interesting too to kind of just chart who was in the game, like who, you know, who played, who, what the rotations were, and who were in there, because those kind of for me at least, those are the things I was looking for in those six garbage games of, like, you know, who are these pairings of two, who can be the guys that once this team is healthy that make up the 10, make up the rotation, right? And what we learned in those last few games was that Jared Vanderbilt, kind of his play demanded to be you know, to be in that group. And I think it was a pretty big vote of confidence in him to play him tonight at all, just in because of what you were talking about with San Antonio. It wasn't one of those teams where they're playing two bigs, you know?
Right.
Like, playing Vanderbilt, I think, against some of these teams that have two bigs that are just going to kind of punish you on the glass and be physically imposing, we've kind of, like, in my head at least, crossed the line of you just have to play him to survive those minutes. But tonight Saunders played him just to play him, mm-hmm. you know, and to get him, you know, to get him out there. And he played him next to Cat. I think that's really what Saunders was waiting for, to play Vanderbilt out of the four, was to be next to a shooter. They were kind of on the fence about doing that with Nas.
Understandably.
And then tonight,
yeah.
And then tonight they did that once Nas was actually able to, you know, stretch the floor a little bit, hit some threes. Like, that's where Vanderbilt fits in on this team, and they can use him as a wing defender. Like, that's the thing, is he's a big, he helps you physically, but, like, he's one of this team's better options on DeMar DeRozan.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
He's very agile.
Yeah, and so that's why I do think he fits both this idea of being a guy who fits the system, in that it allows you to play fast and allows you to play kind of small because he can guard small guys.
Right.
But also provides you some insurance physically for when you're going to play, you know, Memphis in whatever that on Wednesday or whatever that is, like when you need to have multiple bigger bodies out on the floor. So it was interesting to me to see that, you know, that not that he's just in there, but I think he will be going forward. And I mean, Lehman got one shift right tonight, basically.
Yeah. So Lehman was in there a little bit, kind of at the end of the first quarter, start of the second quarter. But he only played for 5 minutes.
And so he
was technically, I think, the 11th. And
no, he was the 10th because Davis didn't play at all.
Okay.
So, but he would be. That's the thing, is Okogie's coming back.
So then, yeah. So I think that, and that's the other thing too that I wanted to mention tonight too, is that I think a lot of the Wolves' problems defensively were, you know, at letting guys get to the rim and fouling them. And I think Okogie does a good job of stepping in there and kind of helping prevent some of that. But back to what you were saying about Vanderbilt, is I think Vanderbilt just gets so much more effective, especially in the offensive end of the floor, as a screener and roller to the rim, and a true lob threat when Cat's out there.
Right.
Because when Cat's out there and he's out of the paint, he's on the perimeter, on the 3-point line, you know,
I mean, Katz is playing like stretch four, right? If he's not getting that touch there, he's clearly like a very tertiary option in the offense of just being a spacer.
And he's a pretty damn good spacer to have. 40% 3-point shooter who can also pump fake and take a guy off the dribble if that lane's going to be wide open still. And so I'd love to see more of kind of that double drag that we've seen with Edwards, where you have Nas and Vanderbilt setting the screen, but this time around you have Cat and Vanderbilt setting the screens, where, you know, Cat can stay out up on the perimeter and Vanderbilt can dive, and then the defense
has
to leave somebody open. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, if he can do that with D'Lo or with Ricky, someone that's just capable of throwing an accurate lob pass or kicking the ball back out to Cat.
Just hitting guys on dives.
It unlocks another, you know, card or another card in this hand that the Timberwolves have of their offense that they can play.
And why that's valuable is you're doing so without losing anything on defense.
Correct.
And, I mean, I think to some extent, if we're being objective, like some of the Vanderbilt, like,
hype is a little
but again, I'm saying all this as someone who thinks that he should for sure be playing for this team, but he's a role player,
yeah.
And you need to use him in ways that allow other guys to get off, or him individually just isn't necessarily justifiable, but you can play him with group. We've seen him now play with multiple different types of guys, where if he is that diver in the double drag, then it will help Cat have more space up top. If you know if you're playing him with Ricky, that's a way better drop off option than Ed Davis is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or Lehman or Wancho are as you know, cutting fours in that sort of way. So it's going to be, you know, you could really kind of shift what your offensive identity is between the bigs based on how much you want to lean into that. Not just that player, but that stop, you know, that your offense starting that way and more of like a horns type setup rather than a 4 or 5 out sort of thing. And that's going to be interesting because in ways it's going to be such a departure from Wancho. Like that's not where Wancho provides value. When you have Vanderbilt out there, it's so different. The theoretical value he provides versus the theoretical value that Wancho provides. And I'm curious to see how Saunders decides to balance that.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting, especially considering that, Ricky said in his post game tonight that, you know, the team struggled to communicate when it was switching between defenses, when it was switching between man and zone. Right. And I think that could almost be tougher to switch on offense because if certain guys are in a rhythm and it, and switching to that more horn style of play, takes a certain guy out of a rhythm or almost prevents a guy from getting in a rhythm like Wancho or something like that. I think
there's going to be some tough choices that need to be made, I think, in the rotation to be able to be like.
But at the same, I agree with that. And at the same time, I think the Timberwolves just need to be able to play multiple. They need have different ways that they can play as opposed to just playing this one way that I think Wolves fans think that the team is going to play, which is that Wancho style of play where it's just space out 4-1 or 5 out all the time. And I think being able to do kind of a little bit more than that is, it could be a great, you know, weapon.
I'm with you. Like that's what they should be doing, but it's also,
how do you get there?
Yeah, well, like now we're asking to have two identities before you have one, you know.
That's fair.
And so that's what I guess that's what I'm curious is, I think you need to do it. Well, I don't know. Do you need to do it one at a time? And that will determine who's out there and who's playing. And I don't know. It's hard with Wancho, man, because he goes, obviously this team is committed to him, but tonight is pretty brutal again. What are we at? 7 games? Are we at 5 brutal games, 1 good game, and 1 decent game from him? Is that a fair
layout
of what it's been? Like, I don't know. Clearly winning is at a premium with this team right now with Cat. Like, they're not – if Cat's playing – Cat said he was, his injury is supposed to keep him out 6 to 8 weeks. He's playing after 2. That's to win. That's to try and make the playoffs this year. Like – I don't know how you can have your best player have that mentality and then your general like identity be like, we're figuring it out for the long term. Like those things don't mesh. So I think for Saunders, you got to hurt some feelings and you got to pick who you're playing and nail it. I just think you just need to nail it. And if that means that certain guys like Lehman are just out of the rotation completely, I'm assuming that's going to happen with Josh coming back. Like, if you're lucky enough to have this team healthy, don't water it down by trying to force Lehman and Wancho into the mix.
Yeah.
You know? Or, you know, to be fair, other guys too. If Ricky's playing bad, like, you know, cut ties with that in a certain game. You know, if whatever, like, if Culver's having one of his confidence games, that's just like, you know, you gotta, if you're, I'm excited that this team, like, that this team's best player wants to actually make a push for this, you know, and actually play enough of the whole, like, building an identity stuff. Like, no, like, let's figure out how we win games.
And that was the attitude he had. He seemed very eager to say, you know what, I'm ready to figure out whatever possible way we can come up with to help this team win games.
And
for
better,
me, whatever role it is, whether I'm, you know, wherever they're putting me on the floor, however I'm playing on defense, I need to find ways to impact winning and to get this team over the hump and win. And that's something you want to hear if you're a Wolves fan.
Yeah. And, you know, I think him playing, I don't know, that action maybe speaks louder than words, but I think as the leader of this team too, he's got to be like, yo, Ryan, like, who are our 10 best guys tonight to beat San
Antonio, figure it out
to play Memphis, like,
fuck it, let's go play.
Exactly, you know, like, and it would just be, you're setting yourself up for some sort of clash if your best player is focused on the immediate and the long and your organization and your coach are focused more on building an identity and those sort of things. Like, it's time to this, you know, maybe put some of that on the back burner, not forget about it. Like, still hold on to what your principles are. Like, they have good principles. They're a team that's focused on playing analytically sound basketball and a style of play that is the most analytically driven. Like, you can still care about those teams, but, you know, prioritize some winning right now because you're 2-7 and your best player apparently rushed back a month early.
Yeah. And the one thing that I keep coming back to is that the Timberwolves really need to stick with what's working. If there's something on a given night that's working, if it's Anthony Edwards getting double drags or high ball screens and going to the rim,
pound it.
Keep doing it.
Same thing with the cat on the block.
In the wedge action, like we saw in the Detroit game. Like, if that's working, pound it. And I think too often we see, you know,
but there hasn't been enough, like, we do
great
have to
moments where like we
have
that.
To like to some extent like remove the six games. Like, we can't say they haven't been doing it enough. This has been one game. This was the first game they've actually like really had it, like the group together. So, do it based off of this.
That's something that I'd like to see moving forward.
Yes,
I
agree.
Is that you need to play in the flow of the game, and if a guy's hot, you need to feed him, with whether it's through an action or spotting him up in the corner and trying to work the ball over to him, or swinging it a few times.
Because that's how you win.
Yeah,
you win. You win by
especially in the playoffs
home,
too.
Yeah, for sure.
And so that's something that we saw tonight. We saw, I think it was on the third quarter when San Antonio took that 7-point lead. I think it was 70-63.
Yeah, and the second unit was out there.
And the second unit was out there. I think it was kind of on the back end of when Cat was out there. And there just wasn't enough Cat. Like, Cat just wasn't getting the ball.
I know what you're
And after
about.
The timeout, Saunders throws the ball to Cat down in the left block or left short corner and just says, go to work. He scores. Next trip down, do the same thing. He scores. Next trip down, do the same thing, and he gets fouled. So I think that they need to just do more of that throughout the course of the game, no matter which player it is or kind of how.
Make the defense take it away.
Exactly. And I think that if you make the defense take it away, then it can just get other guys open and help the next guy get
in rhythm.
Yeah,
and then go to the next thing. All right, they took that away. Now
we're
going to something.
And I think the Timberwolves have three players who I think are uniquely positioned to be able to do the same thing over and over again successfully, whether it's Karl Anthony.
Nails, like, that you hammer home.
Correct. Whether it be Karl Anthony Towns in the post, D'Angelo Russell in the screen and roll game, and then Anthony Edwards, you know, getting downhill. Mm-hmm. And I think that those are key because two of those you can play together, and then, you know, one of those or two of those you can play together kind of at the end of the game, and you can say, okay, we can either go the Cat path or the D'Lo path, and then the other one is the second unit where you have something you can turn to when neither of those players are on the floor or only one of those two players, Cat or D'Lo, are on the floor, and you can just stay afloat and you know, get ahead or stay ahead.
Right.
Your second unit, which is really important considering the fact that I think that this starting unit is capable of beating out other starting units.
I'm with you. He's Jack Borman at JR Borman 13. You can read his recap of tonight's game from Target Center at canishoopas.com. Jack, thanks for doing it. Will you be at the game tomorrow?
I do not think I'll be here tomorrow, but I'm hoping to be back this upcoming week for for either Memphis or the Hawks game.
Cool. So maybe we'll talk again after that one.
Sounds great.
I will be back, probably just me, after tomorrow's game against San Antonio. I think it'll give us an opportunity to kind of have, what would that be, 96 minutes. Well, it'll be more than, it'll be 101 minutes of this team with Cat in the mix. Hopefully Cat plays. We'll have to see how he's able to handle things on a back-to-back. But
he seemed confident that he'd be back tomorrow, I think. He seemed eager.
Yeah, you would think also if you were just going to play one of the two of the back-to-back, it would be the second one.
Because you can rest right after.
Yeah, you would think. But we'll see. I'll be back to talk about that after Sunday's game. Until then, I am Dane. Peace out. How I'm feeling, man, I hope it never stop, yeah. Green and hot so you can find me in the crowd, yeah. Don't let standards ever bring you down, yeah. Hope you dancing like no